All right, let's do this. How are you, what the fuckers? What the fuck buddies? What the fucksters? What the fucking ears? What the fuckiners? What the fucking... That's the same, isn't it? What the fuckiners? What the fucking ears? You know, it doesn't matter. How's it going? I'm Mark Maron. This is my podcast, WTF, with me, Mark Maron. Still out of town. It's a long one. It's a long trip. I'm out doing the work. I can't be specific about the work, but as many of you know, I am in Alabama, and it's been lovely down here. I've met nothing but nice people, and that trend seems to continue. I didn't know if it would, but I've met more people because we're working in different places, and the people are generous. They're pleasant. They help out. They have stories, and they talk a certain way, which is actually very very charming. Yeah, I am becoming Southern. Is that possible? Maybe I'm just, you know, kissing up a little bit. Not really. It's been a great time. By the way, Neil Brennan is on the show today. He's got a special out there that he put out a while ago called Three Mics. But, you know, many of you who've listened to this show for a while know that Neil, this is the second time Neil's been on, because Neil was on once before and he didn't want me to release it. I'll explain it to you later. But we had a nice, very good conversation this time. But there is one in the vaults that will never see the light of day. I'll try to give you a little more insight on that in a minute. So, you know, I'm down south. I told you guys I had to go to New York for 2 days, but I was down here doing the work for 4 days, and I was getting a little strung out. I was getting a little hot. It was a little too hot out for me, even though the work was going good. It was just like, oh God, it was a little slow. I'd enjoyed the 4 days, but I had to go up to New York to do some press for GLOW. And I flew into LaGuardia, which I don't usually do. Usually I go to JFK because I'm flying from the West Coast. And I can't remember the last fucking time I flew into LaGuardia. But it must have been a regional flight. I remember flying there when I was in college and stuff on the shuttle. I believe used to go into LaGuardia. But what hit me this time really was I flew in, and LaGuardia doesn't look like it used to, but you do take a different flight path. And that was the airport that I flew in all the time when I was growing up in New Mexico. And we would fly back to the East Coast to see my grandparents or see relatives or whatever. And they drive in from Jersey to pick us up. And something just hit me about that. I was flying in. You fly in from a different direction. Something was just happening. There was a familiarity that was a little older than recent memories or even decade-old memories. I mean, these were 40, 50-year-old memories sort of hit me. And I got off the plane and I walked out, and it wasn't specific to LaGuardia, because LaGuardia feels like it's actually in the city somehow. But I got off and I got hit with that weird, damp, humid coolness. It wasn't hot, but it was humid. It was cool, but there's a wetness to the air, and you could just sort of smell the exhaust and the tar, and there's just a hint of ocean to it. And it's a very specific smell to New York. And something just, my brain just kind of exploded with some familiarity that is as deep and old as my life on this planet. And I've never been that excited in recent memory to get to New York. And I don't think it had a little bit to do with being in the country for 4 days, but there was just something sparked up in me. And the last few times I've been in New York, I've not been that thrilled to be there. I know how to be there. I like being there, but I'm ready to leave usually. But for some reason, I just got locked into a nostalgic mode or an excited mode. I stayed at a new hotel. I actually had the moment where I'm like, man, can I live here? Should I move back to New York? And then it sort of stuck. It sort of stuck for the 3 days I was there. I got there. I ran into Carly Mensch and Liz Flahive, who were also at the hotel. They're the showrunners for GLOW. Hung out with them for a minute. I met Brendan McDonald, came in for lunch, so touch base with Brendan. We don't see each other a lot. We talk to each other a lot. He's not only my producer and business partner, but he's a friend, and you got to have some FaceTime with your friends, get caught up. And then later that night, my buddy Sam Lipsyte, the novelist, the writer, the bard, the professor at Columbia. Sam Lipsyte and I are old friends, good friends, and I don't spend a lot of time with my good friends because they're not around. You got to spend the time. World's on fire. Things are coming to a close. Things are changing, maybe not for a better. A lot of people are dying. People are getting shot. Shit is not being solved. Things are painful. They may feel out of your control. You do what you can, but you got to lock in with the people you love and focus and feel it, because this is it. This is it. Man, it was just good. It was just good to see everybody. It was good to see the city. Felt like an old friend. Did some press. Allison, Sadell, and I, and Liz and Carly did a panel for the TV Academy. They showed a couple episodes. We did a Q&A. That was fun. Then the last day, man, plane left a little late. Fucking, you know, went to Mogador Cafe to have the halloumi eggs. Matt Sweeney lives across the street. Got him down there. Then we caught up. And then he turned, you know, I haven't talked to Matt in a while. He's been on the show. Now, this is the fucking thing that blew my mind. All right. Look, I know things are bad for a lot of people, and I know things are scary for a lot of people, but it's okay to live your life. You gotta. So I'm talking to Matt, and he tells me, like, I don't always know what my friends are up to. And I know Matt plays with everybody, and he's always got tales to tell about people he's playing music with. And I knew that he went on the road with the Iggy Pop, Iggy's post-pop depression tour. Now, here's the thing. What I didn't know that he played bass on it, number one. He told me that they recorded last year's performance at Royal Albert Hall. Now, the reason I'm telling you about this is that three people that have been on my podcast were in that fucking band. And they were all separate entities when I talked to them. Josh Homme from Queens of the Stone Age. Matt Sweeney playing bass. And Iggy Pop. Right? So I immediately, like, I downloaded it, and on the plane I watched it, and Matt told me what I was in for in a way. He said, you know, I said, what are you playing? You playing any, what songs? He said, we're playing that post-pop depression album, but we're also doing most of, if not all of, The Idiot and Lust for Life. These are seminal, beautiful, perfect Iggy records where he's really using his voice. And they're dark and moody and beautiful. And I was like, get the fuck out of here. You're playing those? You're playing those. And I watched it, and it was spectacular. I mean, because the band is so tight. Josh is such a, like, he's so on top of it. It was amazing. Like, I mean, it might be the best fucking concert movie I've ever seen in my fucking life. And I, you know, and I've seen a lot of it, and I've talked a lot of, like, Iggy was thrilled, and he was in such perfect voice, and he remembered, like, why am I saying that? Like, he wouldn't. He's got to be, like, almost 70, and he just nails everyone, and the band is so fucking tight, and you could just feel watching it that it was one of those nights that were never going to happen again. And he looked so thrilled, and it was just beautiful because he's doing his Iggy thing. They're singing these great old songs, Lust for Life, 16, China Girl, Nightclubbing, Success. They're all there. They're all there. Those ones. The ones that if you love Iggy and you know the ones I'm talking about. But it was just great because somehow or another he's stage diving, and about, like, you know, a quarter of the way in, he's bleeding somehow. He's bleeding from his head. And you see it and you're like, oh, of course. I mean, thank God. I mean, that's what he does. If he's not bleeding from something, it's not a good Iggy Pop show. I don't know how it happened, but and he had blood on the side of his face dripping the entire concert. And he's just so thrilled. You could just tell he was having the night of his life. And I am watching it. I tell you, man, it's just an Iggy concert. But I got choked up, man. I got choked up because I knew that fucking thing, that was never going to happen again. It's worth it. It's worth checking that out. By the way, I should tell you guys too, GLOW, second season, is premiering on, or dumping, it's going to all be there on June 29th. I should tell you, I didn't tell you, that the Iggy Pop Live at Royal Albert Hall, post-pop depression, whatever it is, you can rent it on iTunes or buy it, but I loved it. I loved it. So, let's talk about Neil Brennan for a second, can we? So Neil and I go way back with Neil. As some of you know, Neil is a comic. Some of you know he's the co-creator of the Dave Chappelle Show. He used to write with Dave, did some movies with him, Half-Baked. But yeah, but I knew him as the kid brother of a comic I started with, and a guy that originally started his career, you know, working the door at the Boston Comedy Club in New York. And I think that at the time we did the first interview, he thought that I was condescending, and I might have been. That, you know, when you meet somebody when they're young, you kind of hold them in that space. And I don't think I afforded him the space to be a grown-up in our first interview. And I think that pissed him off. And I'll have to cop to that. I mean, I'll have to cop to that. We did the interview in 2011. And a few weeks after doing it, he told me to shelve it. And that he told me because, you know, I didn't show him the respect he deserved. And I don't know if I got it for a while. Because we did have a big blow up after that. But then in 2012, he was on a live WTF from Vancouver, and we hashed it out. And, you know, as I said, the problem was really him thinking that I disrespected him, that I didn't respect him enough. And then I thought that I initially thought he was being entitled and projecting. Here's a clip from that episode, of us, you know, resolving the problem the best we could at that time.
The truth was, I didn't feel a respect from you. And I'm not saying I deserve fucking rose petals under my feet, which that's where your head goes. Your head goes, this motherfucker. That's not... I was like, I just felt like you've had this podcast, you told me you were going to put me on it very early, and then you're just having fucking guests, and I love the podcast, you just have guest after guest after guest.
Although this is a different issue.
No, it's the same one, though.
No, but okay, but so, but this is, there's
I'm
a whole layer
you,
of like...
more insight.
Right, okay, but there's a whole layer of you sitting there going, when's my fucking turn?
Yeah, well, you, which you should know about as a guy that's tried to get on television.
Tried. See how he frames things?
No.
Just listen to... listen to what he pushes out there. This is part of the issue.
I've heard you talk about club owners who wouldn't book you as quote unquote evil cocksuckers. So I know that that's when you're being excluded from something, you know that there's going to be a visceral reaction. Don't act like you're magnanimous. Like, well, no, they make their choices, and we're all adults here. You instantly go to he's a fucking evil cocksucker.
I try to wait a few minutes.
No, I know.
I'm getting better at that, man.
No, I know. So I'm fucking listening to every week. I'm like, when is this fucking invite coming? Never comes.
Then we finally
go on the show, and it's like, yeah, you did this thing. Then you're kind of like throwing me scraps. The biggest... Yeah, I guess so. Was that big popular? I guess. No, it's fucking insanely popular, way beyond where it should be popular. If you hadn't known me as a fucking little kid, as like a 17-year-old kid,
right,
you'd have more like abstract respect for me. So I felt like I had to somehow overcome our origins of our relationship.
But you were a dick of a kid. I mean, it wasn't like I was like, oh, there's that cute guy that I used to like so much. I mean, you were a, you know, like...
Who didn't you think was a dick, though, in the 90s?
I don't know.
Yeah, the list is like, it's a fucking lot of dicks and like three good people.
And I can't even remember them, apparently.
Yeah, exactly. Three good people, most of whom he married.
All right, well, okay. I can take it. I've done 250 of these fucking shows.
How many of the people did you think were dicks at the beginning of the interview?
Most of them.
Yeah.
No, I don't know. There's only...
That's the arc of the show. This person is a dick. Please welcome so-and-so.
No.
Then by the end, you go, you know what? You're not a dick. And then, but you go, but next week's guy, total dick. Applause breaks. There's got to be some truth to it.
No, I'm taking hits for everybody. That was that, but this is this. You know, Neil and I, since then, even have gotten closer sometimes. But yeah, we have a mutual respect. We have a way of communicating. It was right for him to set me straight, for sure. And also, I do want to mention that Neil is embarking on a national stand-up tour called Here We Go, with dates nationwide through the end of the year. For ticket and venue info, go to neilbrennan.com. And also, there's a lot of conversation in this talk about Neil's Netflix special from last year, Three Mics, which you can still check out, and you should. If you don't know the concept, he had three microphones set up, one he used for one-liners, one he used for regular stand-up, like a regular stand-up set. and one he uses as sort of a confessional mic, personal stuff. It's pretty brilliant. It's worth watching. And this is me and Neil Brennan. This is actually from the old garage. It's a great...
Every now and then, there's a decision that's a no-brainer. And I can tell you from experience, it was a no-brainer to use Stamps.com when we started using it 11 years ago. Crazy. 11 years ago.
Now, more than a decade later, Stamps.com is better than ever. The Stamps.com mobile app is like having a post office in your pocket wherever you are. You can take care of things on the go, like mailing checks, sending invoices, legal documents, and more. Easily schedule package pickups through your Stamps.com dashboard. And when you need to take care of shipping, all you need is a computer and printer. Stamps.com even sends you a free scale. Make the same no-brainer decision that over 1 million other businesses have with Stamps.com. Sign up with the promo code WTF for a special offer that includes a 4-week trial plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. Just go to Stamps.com, click on the microphone at the top of the page, and enter code WTF. Talk. So here we are. We're back. We're back again. I already feel like our tone is better.
Yeah. No, I completely agree. That's why I wanted to. That's why I wanted you to eat the last one and let's redo. Let's let some time
wait a
pass.
Few years.
Yeah. Let's wait a few years. Let's both develop as people, as artists, accomplish some things that are nagging at us.
Well, what did you say to me the other night? Because it was resonant, but I don't quite remember it. It's like I
said it. It's nice to see you get successful enough to do act outs on stage.
Oh.
That's basically
what
I was
saying.
Oh,
no. I mean, when you said about talking to you, it said, like, I'd like you to talk to me. Like, you made, like...
Oh, right. Yeah, right, yeah.
Like,
yeah.
You know, yeah. As opposed to maybe whatever idea...
An idea of me.
Right.
Which is very difficult to shake.
Right.
An early idea of somebody is very difficult to say because you knew me as an 18-year-old doorman at a comedy club.
I know, but I think I was thinking about it, and mm-hmm. I don't necessarily think that was all of it. I think that, you know, we both had an attitude. I don't think that I necessarily was putting you there. I knew what your successes were, but you had this other side of me being the guy who knew you as a doorman.
Yes, yeah. So I was paranoid.
And you had something, and you were like, you were going to be like, yeah, this fucking guy.
Yeah.
No, he doesn't have any respect for my journey.
Mm-hmm.
Fucking another dad. Another dad in the world.
Another dad to which you had no generosity of spirit about because you were on the same track and you would criticize me for dad shit. It's like, buddy, you got the same thing. How are you shitting on me about it when you're literally, we're in the same swamp?
Well, I watch your special, and the difference between, you know, my dad and your dad is my dad was insanely needy. It was not a one-sided shit show.
Yes.
You know, it was a shit show, and then contrition, and then sadness, and then, you know, sucking me back in.
Yes.
Just obliterating my boundaries and just absorbing my sense of self. So like
that's a different
thing. Narcissism.
Yeah,
my dad had the added bipolar thing. So he was narcissistic, but then he'd go completely, you know, into the darkness.
And then was it up to you to sort of rescue him, or he would become?
Oh yeah,
I used to
do a book about a bit about that, about how that's how I started doing comedy. My mom would say, "Your dad's still in bed. Why don't you go up and
do some
make a laugh."
Doing a type.
You're the only one that can make him laugh. I'm like, oh fuck.
Oh, that's cute.
But you've gotten better since I last talked to you.
Yeah.
This special was. We can start from there because you know it is a interesting format and it's and it seemed to work. You balanced it, but isn't there part? So you avoided the negative parts of doing a one man show.
Being maudlin.
Well, just, you know, just that narrative where it's like, I don't have to be funny. This is honest.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah, yeah.
And the funny should all be resonant with the emotional journey we're taking.
Yes.
So you were able to avoid the weight of that.
Yes. It's a trap to me because I think it's like it makes the shows not that good. Or maybe they're good, but they're not very funny. Seems like a trick.
Well, yeah, and they're not around anymore. I think it was a way for people to sort of showcase the whole spectrum of who they are.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also a way for stand-ups who, you know, are not succeeding or not, you know, they're out, you know, they've done everything they could stand-up wise. Uh-huh. So now it's sort of like, maybe I need to infuse more of my sadness into this so people really know me.
Yes.
And a lot of them were just so sort of like weighty and like, you know, rough.
There was a period in the mid to early 90s where it's like everyone tried their hand at it.
Yeah. I still think Colin Quinn has a resentment against me for something I said to him many years ago. You know, this is even before he put me on Tough Crowd and stuff, because I always felt the tension. But there was one time where when he was like doing his first one man show, I was at the Cellar sitting with somebody. And, you know, he stopped at the table and he said he was doing this one man show. And I was like, yeah, you can't hack it on the road anymore, huh? And I remember he just looked at me and like bit his knuckle and says, you don't know me well enough to say that.
Yeah.
And I think that was it. That was it for me and Colin for life.
Yep.
Can you see that?
Yeah. Sometimes that's all it takes. Just one thing, man.
I know.
That's your strength. That's your that's your gift.
I can't do that.
You can end it in one. It's like a game show where like I can end this relationship in one sentence.
Give me a second. Let me get a little information about you.
A little. Okay, I think I'm ready. Yeah,
I guess I did do that. But when you were working on that thing, so one mic's the jokes, and those like that was interesting too, because the one-liners, they're all great, but you know, because of the way you've evolved as a comic, you don't really do that type of joke.
No, they were tweets, basically.
Oh, really?
They were just good tweets.
Right.
They were tweets, and I was like, I can't, you know, if you have an act and you're building out a hunk, an area, then you'll go like, hey, there's a one-liner I can throw in there. They didn't match with anything. So I was like, I had all these excess things.
Yeah.
And then I had stand-up, and then I was like, and then there's also shit that if you listen to like The Moth or whatever,
right,
and you go, oh, I feel like I could do that,
sure, but you didn't feel like you could integrate it into stand-up.
No, I didn't, because I don't think the stories are jokey enough,
right,
and I think it's too sad, they're a little too sad or slash real for a club.
Right.
For a late
Not
Friday
for me.
Show. No, I think they are. I think that they are set. I mean, your stuff with even your dad or your tension with relationships, there's always a lightness to it.
Yeah.
And I wanted to not be light.
Yeah.
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 I wanted to not be light. But I wanted to be like, I remember I took an acting class once and the guy was like, you have to be realer. And I was like, I will be so sad that this theater will collapse.
Yeah.
And he was like, try it. And I did it. And the scene was great. And I was like, okay.
Yeah.
All right. So I wanted to do the thing that I didn't want to show people.
Right.
That's what I wanted to do. I wanted to like show parts of myself that I was like, these are not for public consumption. What's the worst thing I can say about myself? Starfucker. Okay. Let me cover that. Let me cover, you know, like, and why am I doing that? And like shit like that, or depression, or things that I didn't want to reveal. I was like, those are the things that are worth revealing, because there's probably a reason why I don't want to, and I'd like to talk about why.
Right, and to what end? For yourself? Or did, you know, ultimately, I mean, the special's been out a while, and we're a little late on this, but it sort of lives forever on Netflix, or as long as they keep it up there. But are you finding that those parts of the special where you shared family dynamics, depression, your own shortcomings, are you getting feedback along the lines of like, you know,
like people... The general feedback is, at first I didn't want that stuff.
Yeah.
And by the end, I wanted it more.
It was funny because the applause, like, the, you know, every time you go to the one-liners, they'd be like, oh, thank God.
Oh, fuck. I know. And it was like literally like, and then you get to the stand-up and you're like, oh, fuck, enough with the glib.
Yeah.
Do something. Like, it really was like you would get tired of the thing. Well, by the time you got to it.
The one hand you played was that, you know, you definitely saw... you know, who you are as a persona, you know, and who you are comfortably talking about real emotional stuff. And then just, you know, the detachment from the one-liners, because the writing's good.
Right.
Like, you know, like anyone could read those.
Yeah.
And, you know, get a laugh.
Probably get a laugh. Yeah.
Right. I think that's it's brave. But it's also, you know, like it's kind of weird that like right when you go from telling the sad stories, That also, and you know, they're touching, you know, they move me. I choked up a couple times. But when you go
see the way you just said that felt like I defeated you in some way.
No,
they touched me, whatever. But
are you going to talk to me like you do in the middle mic? No.
I've always wanted to talk to you like the middle mic, Maron. Like, I've always been ready for, I've been standing here waiting to talk to you like two hurt people.
Well, okay, so let me tell you my issue then. Why that tone you mistake as being condescending or dismissive.
I guarantee you 90% of the audience who just heard that, rewind it. Tell me that wasn't condescending.
But knowing where you are, and knowing, now let me tell you like what I just told you about my father, who was also depressive, and now I know you were depressive. I didn't know that. So when I feel that, which I have I'm an empath for that shit.
Yes.
So when I get around people that are innately depressive, you know, I go into self-protection.
Yep.
There's no,
got it.
Because like it'll just sink me.
It's a trigger, yes.
So it's not even a trigger.
Interesting that you didn't sense that you didn't sense that I was a depressive.
No, I didn't.
That's fucking really, that's fun. That goes to that cold bored superior.
No, that's what I always sense, and that's what the problem was.
Yeah.
Is that like if you were a little more weepy, you know, I could have, like, I don't know how you didn't cry in the fucking middle mic. I mean,
that was because I couldn't. Meaning, like,
you couldn't because you might not stop.
Yeah, because the show would have. Did it once that way, and it was hard. Like, it's hard. It's really hard to come back
from crying.
From
not talking about emotion in a controlled way.
Right. Yeah. To actually experiencing the emotion.
Dude, I got on stage at Carnegie Hall and I literally had to stop for a second because I was crying just because I was opening. I was on stage at Carnegie Hall.
Yeah, I'm sure.
And it took me an hour to get them, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, I bet.
But they all knew me.
Yeah.
But yeah, but I think that innately what I do is like, because, you know, I don't want to get choked up either. Two depressives together, you know, and I'm not willing to call myself a depressive. I don't know that I am.
I don't think I am. I don't think you are.
I'm anxious.
Yeah.
Anxiety problems.
Yeah.
And I'm defensive. But I think more than condescending, it's okay, I can give you a compliment. That was very moving. I found myself touched.
Great.
I related to it.
Right.
And, you know, it choked me up a little bit. And, you know, I was impressed and happy and proud of you.
Thank you. Yeah, yeah, that's all I wanted. That's all I wanted anybody.
Thanks for coming by.
I should get out of here. You validate?
So where was I going with? Oh, the crying thing. So you did it a couple times where you did.
Yeah, and you just can't. Even at the end of the show, when I do the cop one-liner, and then I get applause and everybody standing ovation and all that stuff. And the interesting thing was I would get standing ovations when I first started doing it, and I would just go like, oh, I got to get the fuck out of here. And get off stage. And then someone was like, you have to take that standing ovation, which I didn't realize. Like, they're like, that's not for you. That's for them to talk to you. Which is like, okay, that's an interesting thing. Even if you look at I'm getting a standing ovation on Netflix, and there's zero joy across my face.
Yeah.
Because I'm still fucked up from 4 minutes before telling this, like, really heavy story.
But do you find that, like, one of my problems is that, you know, from having the similarities we have, is I'm not great at experiencing joy or letting
if at all.
Right. Or letting love in or trusting it or, you know, like, I don't know. Like, I've gotten better at being open and I can feel it. And, like, I guess because I'm getting older that my emotions, they become harder to keep in. And I don't know why I'm keeping it in.
Yeah.
But that's a real issue. It's like, I'm not going to do this now.
It's the biggest issue to me.
Right. If I'm not going to let these things happen now.
Yeah.
When?
I bet you can relate to the idea that you've had this external success. Like most of your dreams or goals that you've accomplished.
Yeah.
And you kind of go, okay, so what was I getting at?
Right.
What was I? Why am I doing all this? To experience some... to experience joy. And you go, well, I didn't quite get it with that. So
I don't know if I was that clear on that. Were you clear on that? Because you say that in the show.
I've only gotten more clear with it in the last year, in that I really feel like, oh, that's a good, three mics is a good thing, and I've done some good stuff in my life and career, and like, I'm less like curious about like, am I good or talented? I'm like, oh, I'm good and talented. So yeah. Now what?
Yeah.
So now what? What am I getting at? Like, what do I want to experience?
And you stop.
I'd hang it up. But for real, like, what do you do? What do you do? Where do you find the joy?
Well, I'm with
when
you.
When you accomplish it externally, then it becomes like, just, it's cute. Like, it was fun when I came in here. Cute, again, it sounds condescending, but it is. Don't take it in a condescending way. You were smoking a cigar
yeah,
and playing guitar.
That's always been my thing.
Yeah.
That's good. I find joy in that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like just standing in a room, an adult man standing in a room by himself, yeah, in a garage by himself,
yeah,
playing guitar.
Yeah.
And like it was kind of resounding in the neighborhood.
Yeah, I find joy in that. But here's the thing with me, it's like there for me, the happiness joy thing was never the goal. It was relief.
And I really like that joke you're doing about getting married, not because of you just wanted to be okay.
Yeah.
I really love that joke.
Oh,
that
joke
is fucking such a great joke.
Well, yeah, it was. Now I don't remember the joke. It just is it like you know.
You didn't want.
Okay, I didn't want kids. I just wanted to be okay. Yeah.
Yeah, like that's I think that's a real force for a lot of people.
Yeah.
I think that's the reason why most people do most things.
Yeah.
Is because they want to feel like, oh, I'm in the pack and I'm not abnormal in any way.
Right.
And please, I'm okay, right? I'm okay?
Well, I'm doing another joke now where that thing I'm saying about how people, maybe some of you came to the show and said, that should be fun. That'll be fun. I've never said that. I've never, ever said that. I wouldn't even think it. Never out of my mouth. My version of that is like, where is it?
Yep. That's correct. What do I have to do? I don't want it. I was just in Chile. And they were like, I was in Santiago, Chile, shooting something. And they were like, let's go to Valparaiso. And I was like, no. No, I don't want to fucking do anything. Let me just stay safe in my little corner. I have my little thing that I do, and I'll just do that. I'm trying to take this to everywhere, to Chile, to Tokyo, you know what I mean? Like, I just want to feel like...
Your box. You're like a cat
in a
box.
I'll go out a little bit. But it's, I'm not, but
do you have a good time when you go out?
It depends, but most things I don't like most things, which I think may be a comedian thing. Like most things just don't work on me.
I don't like it when there's a lot of people involved expecting me to like it. Mm-hmm. Like I don't like showing up where it's like, hey, we're all going. It's like, ugh, all you.
And yeah.
And then I got to react to your reaction. Like,
yep.
Like if I decide, like a lot of times if I go with my girlfriend or I decide to go see jazz or whatever, finally mm-hmm. go, I got money. Let's buy a ticket to the thing that people like.
Yep.
And I'll like it.
Yeah.
I'm like, yeah, why don't I do this more often?
Yes.
And then I won't do it for another year.
Yeah, I have a few things like that.
Yeah,
but, yeah.
But it's just the idea of transition. It's like when you travel, you know, that sort of converging on the plane, you know, getting to the plane, you know, that all that.
Yeah, and the way you build it up in your head is this nightmare. And then if you pre-check, it takes 8 minutes.
Yeah, yeah. And then once you're there, you're like, okay, I know how to do this.
Yeah, this is fine.
What the fuck is wrong with me?
Yeah, why did I imagine? Everything is worse in theory than it is in practice.
But I noticed with you, and I don't know about me, but like I noticed like you do this, like I do this thing because I have a, you know, body dysmorphia. And like I'm always, you know, poking at my fat, like feeling like the density of it.
Yeah.
And I noticed you poking at yours too.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
I have love handles
okay.
that I find infuriating.
So you have it too.
Because I'm really skinny.
Yeah.
And I weigh 150 pounds.
Yeah, it's just.
I still have love handles.
But it's just skin, dude. Doesn't anyone tell you that? Haven't you had a girl tell you that? It's just skin.
Yeah, but it's aggravating that all. I would have to get to like 138 pounds to not have love handles. And then what, Neil?
Yeah.
So you get rid of the love handles, and then that's where I am with everything now. Like, okay, you wanted. To do a good special, and then what? You wanted to do a show, and then, like, what am I getting at?
How old are you?
44.
So I have 10 years on you?
Yeah.
Well, sometimes you don't like, you know, not to speak like some elder, but but sometimes I think that what you did with the three mics, and because I know, I realized like, is this going to be all the specials now with him, with the three? You know, like there was part of me that thought like, is this going to be the approach? But no, I think that the attempt was for you to become whole.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Yeah. So an integrated being. So yes. You were able to separate these three things. And I think the ritual of that will eventually manifest itself. That you will, you know, eventually feel more comfortable speaking openly about things that are cause real pain for you, mm-hmm. and that you'll probably be able to integrate more of that into your regular act,
mm-hmm.
and that the one-liners are always going to be what they're going to be. But I saw it as a ritualized attempt for you to sort of own your whole being.
Yeah, I also think it's a ritual. Yes, it is a ritual. It also is no accident that it's the most successful thing I've done.
Is it?
I mean, Chappelle Show, but I did it with Dave. So, like, the most successful thing I've done by myself by a huge factor.
Oh, in terms of executing it?
Execution the way it was received.
Yeah.
And that's the... So, the interesting thing was it made me... it was more about feeling the bad news was the acceptance from the outside made me feel good.
Yeah.
You know, which
that's
is
not bad news.
Yeah, I know, but it's like, success will make you happy and all that stuff. And it's like, well, it kind of did.
But see, what something like that, though, something that you have ownership of, like the one thing I noticed about in where I'm sort of, you know, splitting off from you on this sort of what next thing is that the one thing I noticed about doing this thing on my own terms, mm-hmm. and then everything I've gotten since this has been on my own terms,
absolutely.
Is that it, whatever the whole was, you know, there's the whole, but then there's also the real issue of self-esteem. So the whole, you know, you reckon with that, however you're going to reckon with it, you know, compulsion, whatever, but self-esteem is achievable by doing esteemable acts and also by taking ownership of your thing, of yourself.
Yeah.
So the one thing that did happen was that, you know, I'm better, a lot better in my skin.
Yeah.
Like the deeper stuff, the body dysmorphia and eating disorders and like whatever, parental stuff. But in terms of, I don't know that I ever, you know, I think I'm somewhat like you, but I didn't have the level of success you did to get validation. But I really think that like what I started to feel was like, I feel okay with myself.
I think this is a very successful thing.
Yeah.
I think you've had more success to get validation than I have.
Really?
Personally. Yeah, because I don't, Chappelle Show, Dave got all the points on that.
Right, but you made a lot of money and you had the immediate result. Like, here, this is only successful because I do what you did with three mics, you know, every day, every week.
Yeah, but that, like, in a great way.
Right, so I spread myself out and made myself wholly available for the most part.
Yes. You used more of yourself.
Right.
I've never heard that the idea that you can get self-esteem by doing esteemable things. Then it becomes, why is it esteemable? In our cases, it's because we made integrated pieces of art, right?
Yeah, and we worked hard and we, you know, our talents landed somewhere.
Yeah.
You know, that like, you know, has an effect. You know, it affects people's lives in a good way.
It affects the way people look at you, which affects you. I mean... And I do find that a little, not disappointing is the wrong word, but it feels like capitalist or a little, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
If it's like that direct an effect of like, oh, people are nicer to you because you did a podcast.
Yeah.
So now everyone treats you differently is a bit, it's a bit of a disappointment in human nature. Like, I wish I could have gotten that just for being a person.
Yeah. But no, but like, they treat me differently, but it's more familiar. It's not, they're not treating me nicer. Like, you know, now, so, you know, certain people who have a relationship with me because I talk to them twice a week. Now out in the world, they're like, Marin, you all right?
Yeah,
you
know, but that's better than indifference.
Oh, yeah, sure.
It's never indifference, sure.
I'm
sure it's always, there's a kindness to
it. And also showing up and listening to people and having to sort of train myself in empathetic listening, you know, just by nature, you know, in here.
You're a very good interviewer. You've done some interviews where I was like, boy, oh boy, that's a fucking really good observation and a really good insight into that person that they probably never heard before or things that I've never heard explained in the way you've explained it.
Yeah, it's all flying by the seat of my pants through you know, experience and whatever. But like the one thing that like I think also that you and I don't know that you like because of what you come from, You know, you're a little tight, right? Control freak.
Yeah, which you never liked. You never liked that about me. Which, again, why does that bother you that I like control? I'm from chaos.
I know.
Why wouldn't I want to be a director and have things just how I like them?
I'm not judging your choices in life.
No, but there's always been a little something about. Mark, you can take take the processor, the Marin processor, the microscope. You can point it at people. You can deduce things that I'm a control freak, and you would judge me for it with no generosity. I'm like, well, I wonder why that is.
I know exactly why it is. We had talked about it, and I know the ACOA issues, and I know but I know what it is. But like for me, I think it's because what is it? And it's not just you. Like, and the one thing that made me happy about the special is that you were able to sort of, as much as you could in a public forum, you know, let go a little bit. You know, like in terms of like when you're talking about where you come from.
Right.
There were moments like that's what the issue with me is like, I don't know why he didn't cry. There was part of me that's sort of like, why is he squirt out a few, this kid? You know?
This 44-year-old kid. Yeah, because.
I
also like writing.
Yeah, I know.
Do you know what I mean? Like, yeah. I like saying things. I like writing things the way they're supposed to. I like. Precision. Like my favorite comedians are all pretty precise.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Sure. Like I respect that.
Except for like listed on your wiki page is one of your, Dave Juskow is one of your.
That's very funny. I think Juskow is fucking.
Did you put that
funny.
In there?
He's I didn't put funny. That in, but I didn't have nothing to do with it.
It said just, influences. I've there were said, like no, four
I've,
influences.
No, I have because I used to, when I was in high school, I'd go to New York and hang out with Kevin, my brother, Dave Attell, Mike Royce, and Dave Juskow.
Right.
And this is in the 80s, and Juskow was fucking funnier than all those guys.
Yeah.
Juskow was really funny.
I guess because, like, what it is, what you're feeling again is really, it's just our personalities. It's not me being judgmental. Is I'm kind of messy, and you're not messy. Right. And there's part of me that's sort of like, why does he get messy? Like, when you're on stage, it's like, he's so, like, you know, organized. Everything's precise. It's like, I want to see him fucking lose it.
I do. Well, I mean, there's times where I do crowd work and I'll shit on. I mean, like, I can do that, but I also
my version of wanting you to have joy.
Yeah. But that's your version of joy. Do you know what I mean?
I guess.
That's, again, there's plenty of times where, like, the other night I said some really funny shit off the cuff on stage.
Oh, good.
It was fun.
Yeah.
Good. I'll get you tape. it was fun, but it wasn't more fun than writing a great joke saying it correctly.
Also, I think there's envy on my part because I don't know if it's discipline. My process is my process, and it doesn't involve, like, a joke for me will evolve over 6 months. Like, you don't.
See, but I would counter that because there are guys like you who go like, I don't write anything down. I just go up there and feel it. I'm like, you do it the same way every night.
Right.
Whether you realize it or not.
No, I do.
You're
I do.
Doing it. And
of
I'm
course.
Not saying that in a way of like dismissive, but I've heard guys talk about like, yeah, I just go up there and feel it. So I don't say it the same way. I'm like, you always say the joke the same
way. Well, yeah, that's my process. Right. Until I get, but sometimes I'm tagless.
You
know,
like,
you know, when you go up there when you wrote it out, you're like, this is going to start here and it's going to end there.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I'm like, it'll start here and I don't really know what's over here.
Yeah.
But I know it's funny enough in the middle to hold its own.
Yeah.
And I'll wait till the thing happens at the end.
Yes. I almost feel like there's a danger in that, like, it's also, I don't want to feel like that part of the show is shitty.
Yeah, no.
I want it to be good and then I'll add tags to the good thing.
Right.
Instead of like, let's see what happens. Because I'm not charismatic enough a performer to go like, I'll fucking go up there and let them drink in the persona a little bit. Like, no. Like, these things have to work on paper.
Well, there you go. So that's the difference. So there you go. That's just the way you are. You don't think you're charismatic enough to wing it.
That's what I found a lot recently is I've directed a few and worked on a few specials of other people.
Yeah.
People are really afraid of bombing and getting heckled.
Uh-huh.
Like, people that you wouldn't believe are, like, really afraid of
getting. Some people can't handle it.
Yeah. Like, they just they don't even want a moment of silence.
Really?
Yeah. Like, people that are really, like, I don't like that.
And
I don't even like looking down.
What does that tell you?
that people have people are paranoid and they're defensive and they have the worst. They think that the worst will happen. But I can relate to it because yeah. There is part of me that's like, no, every fucking screw should be tight.
Well, yeah, because on a day to day basis when you were growing up, you didn't know what was going to happen.
No, you had no idea. You get heckled at any time.
You know where it was going to come
with
from.
With these hands.
Yeah, brothers or dad.
Yeah, you
or
didn't know who was where it was going to come from. The sky, below, above. You didn't know.
Because like I try to do that, but like there's something about my nature where it's like on more later, I had to deal with something when I walked out on stage. There was a woman who was talking to me. She was drunk. And it was like right when they brought me out.
Are you happy that happened?
I left it in.
Yeah. But was it like, had you forgotten about it 20 minutes later? Meaning like when you did, was it like?
I find there, I like things that are undeniably, you know, in the moment. That, yeah. You know, because like a lot of us pretend like we're making shit up. But mm-hmm. when something really happens in the moment and there's a reaction to it, even if it doesn't involve somebody else, I'm so thrilled that, you know, that I'm that present.
Right.
You know, and that, you know, it was witnessed and that it happened. Like a lot of times after doing an hour, I'll walk off. Say, I have one line right now in my new stuff that I can't wait to do. And I don't even know if, you know, it's just like I'm excited about one piece, one line.
Yeah.
And but like a lot of times when I write the way I write, because I think it's part of why I do it the way I do it is to make sure that I'm, you know, engaged and alive and I'm not just running for laughs. That yeah. like I'm having an active, you know, conversation with this, with me in them and through the audience.
Yeah. Well, that's a different, there's a part of me that wonders, not like what's the value of that, but it is the.
It's nourishing for me.
Yeah.
The soul thing.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like even if nobody ever sees it, even if one door guy comes up and goes, you did a thing the other night. And I'm like, oh yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I'm with, yeah. I it's because I like crave control, I guess.
No,
but I do enjoy like a crowd work thing or something I've right. never said before that just comes to me. That's fucking super satisfying. But I also, I guess I don't pursue it.
But if you go back, you know, like this idea, like the only thing with my nature is with control freaks is that I do have an innate desire to bully them and
such a weird instinct.
I just want to see them lose it a little bit. You know, like, I don't know why, because then I can connect with you. You know what I mean? It's
yeah.
like, you know, okay, you got your shit tight and it's together, but like, I want to see what's in there. You know, if I don't feel like I'm connecting because someone has healthy boundaries.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh, that old thing. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm going to keep poking until I wake up whatever
oh,
monster.
Oh, yeah. Because I see you do that on Twitter sometimes. I'm like, what is he doing? Where you'll just go and pick a fight with Patton or something. And I'm like, what are you?
I haven't done that in a long time.
Yeah, no. But that to me is like, why bring that sort of? That just immediately fills me with like bad chemicals that I don't want. It just makes me feel like, oh, that would stress me out so bad.
I never won when I did that. I never won when I did
it. It just stresses me out so badly. That's the thing that you would. The worst party you'd like to pursue?
Yeah, the conflict of like starting, you know, drama of some kind or shit, you know what I mean? Like, I'm not sure why I do it, you know, but there's certain types of people where like their control thing is just so, like I don't have access.
Right.
And I want it for whatever reason. I want to connect with them or, you know, I want them to see me is probably what it is. I want you to fucking register this.
Yeah.
So I'm going to upset you.
Well, and that must be the, how has that manifested itself in relationships with women?
Well, that whole thing, that becomes more like if I can, back in the day where I'm not in that now, but where if I met somebody who was equally, you know, afraid of intimacy, but very drama ridden, that you would cause things to cause problems to avoid just like opening
just sitting
your heart
there and being there. Yeah.
Yeah. If you're constantly in contrition or drama, you know, it feels like intimacy when
yeah.
you're crying and apologizing.
It's hard to get. Yeah. And it's also hard to get out of that.
Yeah, it's hard to get out of it, but it is exhausting for one person will eventually
did
be like,
you ever,
I'm out.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. But eventually you get out of it, but I'm saying it's hard to train your body.
Oh
and
no.
Spirit
yeah. To not do that.
That's not a relationship.
Oh, well, I'm doing it now.
And I bet you fight boredom.
It's not so much boredom. It's like, it's more of a sort of like, you want to put it on the other person, but it's not them. It's you. It's not boredom. It's more of a sort of like, what is the feeling? It's more tension. You know, I don't feel like, I feel not bored, but kind of like, I know I got to step up to this. Like, I know it's a matter of unlocking something in me. Do you know what I mean? But then what happens is, like, do I want to unlock it with this person? Do I want to unlock it at all? You know,
that's like, the thing that I like, that other joke that you've been doing that I like, which is the thing about dying alone.
Oh, yeah.
Of like this, the great fear.
Yeah.
Of dying alone. And yeah. You're like, what's the, yeah, what? So what? How is a nurse?
Yeah. Yeah.
And maybe it's better.
Yeah. Yeah.
Than with your family and all that
right,
stuff.
Like, right.
And that's the thing of like, it's people acting from a place of like, I don't want to do anything abnormal. I want to feel okay. The thing that everyone does is you die with somebody. And it's like, but you die with a love. By the way, 50% of people don't die with their loved
right.
one.
Right. They die in the, you know, at work or yeah, in the or, car. In
yeah,
hotel.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Or the other person dies before them.
Right.
So that doesn't work. But
I think the thing that we share is this fucking horrendous fear and distrust of loving and being loved. Right. So that, you know, why would you want to have someone around when you're at your least controlled, when you have no control?
Yeah.
And you're just so vulnerable and so, you know, needy. You know, why would you want that to be witnessed?
I don't even know what the thing you're talking about. I'm afraid of love or being loved. I don't know. This is going to sound. I don't even know what you're talking about.
Oh, you don't.
If that makes sense. Like, I don't know. If somebody said, Neil, you're afraid of love and being loved, I'm like, no, I think I'm looking for a connection with somebody that I like. I just like being with them more than I like being by myself. And I've had that for periods with people, and then something happens and it evaporates. Hmm. I'm looking for that long term. So the idea of like loving someone or not being loving or being tender, I am tender. I am like, I can also be super fucking cold and dismissive, but I can also be tender and loving and there for someone to be present and listening and all that stuff. So I don't know, but I have gotten to the point with my therapist recently where I'm like, hey, what if a love relationship isn't the goal of my life? Because I've spent most of my therapy going like, I gotta be a better boyfriend, lover,
I love that moment
person.
In therapy where you're like, maybe it's not gonna happen.
Yeah. It's really like, but why is that this is all theoretical anyway.
I have asked the same question.
And
it's like, what is the benefit of me trusting somebody?
Yeah. How much better is my life going to get?
What do I get out of this showing my vulnerability to somebody I'm in a relationship with?
Yes. Yes. But there's also the thing of like, there is a cost to being in a relationship, which is compromise and some level of like doing shit you don't want to do, and what's the benefit?
But that's my point, is that, you know, in your special you said, you know, that doing service is supposed to, you know, get you some good feelings.
Yeah. Yeah.
But that's the same thing, is that, you know, in the sense that, you know, showing up for somebody else, you know, in an open way, in an empathetic way, and being supportive and loving, you know, or doing it selflessly, you know, is supposed to feel good. And, you know, it has a history of making people feel, you know, better.
Yeah.
But, you know,
historically,
yeah. And when you say in your special, like, that my, you know, like, my parents were not nurturing. They were self-involved, needy people. Fine. They did not know how to love. They would not have said what your father said, which is gnarly.
Yeah.
But my mother did say to me, you know, when you were a baby, I just didn't know how to love you. And I'm like, all right, well, there's the puzzle piece I was missing.
There's a big one, yeah.
Right. So I get that. And then, so what do I have for wiring?
You know,
like, if I was not trained in nurturing and I was not trained in being loved by people who were capable of it,
yes.
How, and yet they said they loved me. So whatever was coming at me, which was like completely
manipulative, but probably not love.
Manipulative and fear inducing. Yeah. That's what love is. I'm like, I don't need, you know. So knowing that that wasn't it, so all of a sudden I know that I'm a guy that, you know, was not given love.
Mm-hmm.
It was something else, and that, you know, I don't trust it. And then I don't really, I'm not completely sure how to do it. Even with my cats, I'm a little hard on them.
Yeah. That my dog, when I go out of town,
yeah,
the woman, Sarah, who takes care of my dog, gives my dog a better life than I give him.
Yeah.
She just, there's, it's like she's the fun mom. She's the fun grandma.
Right.
And like, can't, lets him eat her food. Just shit, yeah, that I'm like, no, man.
Yeah.
We don't do that.
Yeah.
There are times where I wonder, am I, in terms of getting to this, being this loving person, are we just spitting in the wind?
Or
is it too far a distance to travel in the time
we have left?
We have, even if we started at 15, is there, from 15 to 90, is that enough time to get to this hypothetical place? Because I don't know that many people that are in romantic relationships that I envy.
Mm.
You know what I mean? There, mm-hmm, aren't that many relationships that I'm like, yeah, I want that.
Yeah, but the weird thing about that, I agree with you, but a lot of times, like, as I get older, I realize, like, I don't know what their life is when they're alone. You know, yeah, I know what that guy's telling me. You know, I know what they do in public, but, like, I don't know what that, you know, if they're crying or I don't know what, right, they're doing.
Yeah, you're talking about the good ones could be bad and the bad ones could be good, or you think they're mostly bad and the good ones?
No, I just think that we don't know. And what we talk about with our friends is blowing off steam a lot of times.
Yep.
And, you know, like, you know, how people act with each other. You know, when you're talking to a guy, you're like, oh, I gotta get out of this. And then they're like that forever. You know, that you might just be the valve, and he goes home and he feels great.
Yeah.
You know, and then, like, he needs you to, you know, hear that shit. So I can't judge. But my question is that what I feel now and what we're talking about is that, like, I know what it's going to take. You know, I know what needs to be unlocked. And I know there's probably a process to do it. Now, what the real question is, do I want to do the work?
Because
we don't know.
I know.
We don't know what's on the other side.
The process is Freudian.
Maybe.
Maybe. Okay.
I think I think you can track it. I don't think you need Freud. I think, you know, what I just said about my parents, you could say about whatever you were brought up with. And the truth is we've survived and we somehow came out with, you know, over time, a sense of self, mm-hmm, that functions and that we can be comfortable with, but we're emotionally hobbled. Because of, like, very, you know, cognitive things.
Yeah.
It's right there. I don't need to speculate. Yeah. So, like, I have to do all this work. Like I've got a fucking, you know, 7-year-old in me that is pretty, you know, obstinate and, you know, doesn't trust grown-ups. And that's what's driving me emotionally.
How much have you changed as an adult? Give yourself a percentage-wise.
In terms of what?
From the age of 25 to now. Just in terms of, like, my personality, I would say the most I see people change in a life is, I find people in 12-step groups maybe change 15 to 20%.
Yeah.
And the most. That's, uh-huh, like, fucking people that go to meetings and work.
Well, that's because you take out this horrible thing, this monster that you were possessed by.
Yeah.
So that's 10% right there.
Right. But it's still, like, and this is an everyday thing.
Yeah.
You can maybe alter yourself 15%.
I think that with age and with experience, whether you acknowledge it or not, and with the sort of, like, natural kind of, you know, slowly not giving a fuck about things that used to really drive your life, that certain change happens. I think there's a core thing that might not change, but I know that, you know, that once I arced out on sort of bitterness and hostility and hurting myself and sort of being self-pitying, that, you know, I was able to get back to something, to start back where I did enjoy watching people and getting laughs and listening to people, like, you know, like, my heart.
You've gotten opened a lot more generous spirit in the last 5 years.
Right. Yeah, that happened. And I think that was a return to something that, you know, I stopped when I was, you know, maybe, you know, in college.
Yeah.
You know, when I started getting my heart broken and started getting, you know, the shit started coming down a little bit. I think I just locked in and I was like, fuck you. Fuck this.
Yeah. That's what I wonder about with this love, this unlocking the love thing.
Well, also, do you think that we might risk do you really want that kind of potential peace? Because it seems to be a choice.
Yeah, I don't. Here's the thing. The thing I was going to say is with the people that are in good relationships that I know.
Yeah,
it's you can tell before because they're kind of happy-go-lucky people.
Yeah,
you and I are not happy-go-lucky. You and I are.
I know.
Cranks.
Yeah,
I know. And then people go like, "You guys are all comedians. You know, don't you have fun?" I'm like. No, mostly what me and my friends do is we call each other and fucking I go crank and then they go crank back.
Yeah.
And that's what we've been doing for fucking 20 years. And like maybe that's what my life is. And there's a part of me that thinks that this dream of becoming a quote unquote integrated person that's capable of love and being loved is a bit like... I'm going to be a pitcher in the Major League Baseball League.
Really?
Yeah, there's part of it that's like, I don't think it's possible. Like, I don't think I can get, or maybe I could get there from here, but maybe not. And right. Maybe it's a waste of time.
Well, I think maybe not. Like, yeah, it might not happen, but what is a waste of time? Is there like some steps that you know about? Has it been laid out to you?
I mean, my therapist sort of kind of implied that there's a thing that if I came more often and we could do this thing, but I'm kind of like, I don't know, man. I'm really looking for like some sort of magic bullet.
Yeah.
In terms of that stuff. And I don't think it exists.
Yeah.
But fuck.
Yeah.
It would be nice to feel like it's like that line that Jason Alexander says in Seinfeld, like, I just want to be normal.
Yeah.
Why can't it be normal?
I don't know that anybody is really.
Yeah.
And I don't know that we really want that.
Yeah.
Yeah, really. I mean, you know, yeah.
And how do you balance the crank that generates jokes and how would you do that and be this peaceful, happy person? Which speaks to the thing earlier of experiencing real joy. You know?
Well, to me, it comes down to like a strange boundary thing, because I think that you like, the way you grew up in your thing was, you put armor on.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas like, you know, I just was a sponge for garbage, it all permeated and my neediness, you know, just knows no bounds innately. So I had to start, slowly understanding, for myself what boundaries are and honoring them in others and try to have them for myself. It's not that was something I had to learn. So
do you respect people's boundaries now? You don't feel the need to
No, I don't. I don't. Like when I'm in the process of like, creating new jokes and stuff, like lately I've been a little snippy. I've been saying some shit about people. I have a little old Marin behavior,
yeah.
But I know it's happening. Like, I'll take a shot at somebody and be like, I'm sorry. Or I'll talk shit about somebody, to somebody else. And I'm like, what am I doing? It's unnecessary. Yeah. And that comes from just the insecurity of creativity. Like I'm smoking cigars. I'm going a little nuts. I'm trying to get some new jokes together. So there's an innate thing that happens when I need to create.
Right.
Where I gotta start hating on myself about something in a bigger way. For me to get to where I need to get to the truth of whatever that is, because if in terms of the crank thing, it's like the thing with other people or with a relationship is like, if I'm open, and I'm feeling good about myself, as soon as someone walks in the room, I'm like exhausted. Do you know, I'm sort of like, ugh, now I gotta deal with this. Even if it's just, hey, how's it going? I'm like, I can't.
You take on their energy? Or I you take, just take well, on their whole
right,
thing?
Right, at some part of that. Right.
Their whole like, life force.
Yeah, it's. I think that's a standard codependent problem.
Yeah.
But like, I'm okay by myself. I'll nap a little more. I'll probably jerk off, during the day,
Great, great. Glad, good to hear.
But then there's that thing. It's sort of like, no one gets to live like this. And I'm like, is this a prize? Did I win?
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah, there are times where I go like, boy, how much better could this be going? Where I'm like fucking like cranking in my head. And I'm like, what could have? Okay.
Right.
So there are guys that are funnier than you.
Yeah.
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 Okay.
Yeah.
What are you going to fucking just harp on that all day? So your life is ruined. Because Chappelle and Rock are better comics than you. I'm like, what are the odds?
You still do that?
Way less. Yeah. Way less, because it's just like, yeah, so what? I'm not going to let that ruin my life.
My thing more is like with you, like, you know, I'm doing this bit that I've had around for a while and I kind of chip away at it. And then you have a line. I'm like, nah, fuck.
Yeah.
That was the line. Neil got the line.
Yeah.
God damn it.
Yeah, there are times
that would have made
my
joke 5 years ago so much better.
Someone will just beat you to the, you know.
Whatever it is, what the line is, like, guys think that a porn is just going to break out at any time.
Yeah, everywhere they go, a porn.
But that beat where you, like, you're in a hotel room and there's a knock on the door and you're like, here we go.
Here we go. Here it is. You knew it was happening. You knew. I figured it would come to it at some point. That really is the fucking level of stupidity in guys.
But it's like a hotel room thing too. When you're
absolutely
out there,
you're like, yeah. Like, when you're visiting a town,
yeah.
You're like, they know.
Go into these fucking like comfort inns and there's just weird work people there who are doing like things at work and you're just looking around like, this is a swinger scene.
Yeah, absolutely. That fucking absolutely. After 1 a.m.
Yeah, this
place,
is going to go
everyone's
crazy.
Everyone's going to be fucking and sucking each other. It's going to be wild. And it's never that.
No.
I've yet to see that.
Never.
Never. I've never opened a door in Hollywood and seen some weird eyes wide shut thing. It's far more human.
It is. Yeah, definitely. So, all right. So when you go back at, like, what have you, like, when you talk about your dad, have you reconciled this shit? I mean, like, I don't know what you're doing in therapy.
I got to say, I think I think about my dad actively very little. Meaning, like, whether it's resolved or not, there's something pretty clear about, hey, I don't think you love me, and then person going, yep, you are correct. You just go, oh, this is very clarifying, and I don't have to be curious or wonder or question myself or go like, but he did love me, and it's the fault lies with me because I didn't integrate. No, I didn't get it.
Yeah.
So it was kind of weirdly, I think, helpful.
Freeing?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's the same thing when my mother told me that thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't know how to love you as a baby. It is sort of like, it's horrible, but you're like, oh, that explains it.
Yeah, it's like when someone, like, you find out the reason you got fired or something.
Or the reason why
someone breaks up with you.
Yeah.
The moment they go, because when you came out of the bathroom, I was like, I'm never fucking that person or whatever.
Yeah.
Like,
but it's more deep than that because it's sort of like, oh, this is why I am who I am.
Yes. Yes. It's the, in some ways, Three Mics is like my origin story. It's like my emotional origin story.
It definitely
and
is.
Comedic origin story of like, this is how it all, this is who I am.
You know? But I can't imagine just being the 10th. I don't understand because because I always like I'm not, it's not naive, but I realize that I'm wrong when I talk to people in here and just be like, so you get along with your siblings? It's like, what?
Yeah. What are the odds?
I've got one and, you know, we were okay.
Yeah.
You know, but I don't talk to him all the time. But having 10 and this idea that I'm just going to be like, yeah, y'all good?
Yeah. It's the, yes, with the amount of stuff that happens in families.
And there's like, what's the age difference between you and the oldest?
16 years.
Yeah.
So the amount of, so my mom had 10 kids in 16 years.
Was your mom good to you?
Yeah, my mom, like, the thing of, like, I did my best, my mom actually kind of did do her best.
Yeah.
Like, she doesn't have the deepest well to draw from.
Right,
but she truly does, like, make it, she hustles.
Because, like, I know two of your brothers, and I knew them when they were younger. I mean, I didn't know them, but I got a sense of who they were.
Yeah.
So, I, like, you know, Kevin, who's a comic, you know, was just irascibly angry.
Yeah.
And just compressed and quite honestly, a little frightening, like difficult to talk to.
Yeah.
And Danny was, like, you know, completely kind of like no kind of just sort of like. Like when I knew him at the strip when he was a bartender, he seemed like different than both of you two.
Yeah.
But just sort of like, you know, kind of, you know, maybe not as smart and but you know, sort of open in a way.
Yeah.
Kind of like seemed to have a pretty good ability to
like
enjoy life.
Yeah, like not
burdened.
Yeah, not prejudiced.
Yeah.
By his own, like he wouldn't make assumptions.
Yeah, is that still the case?
I don't know. Because I don't see him.
You don't talk to him?
No.
I'm
not mad. It's just like, eh.
Yeah.
We don't have to. Those guys are mad at me, which is, you know.
Oh, they are?
Yeah.
Okay. So, but just the idea of being the 10th kid, I mean, there, like when I've talked to other people like that, there's almost no attention paid to you. I mean, I
was a bit of the mascot, though. Uh-huh. I was like a little wise beyond my years, yeah. Little like cute Neil, but put a button on this.
Yeah,
like
right.
I was, So I was like, I was pretty.
You were
engaging.
Like, oh yeah, and everyone. Like, the ones that were around were having a good time with you.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, they were all my brothers and sisters were great.
Yeah.
Growing up.
Yeah,
they were
yeah.
fucking really all to a person, really good older brother.
Like, and your parents were together.
Yeah, until probably the 2 years after I moved out, 3 years after I moved out.
Oh yeah.
Then they became. Then they realized the smoke cleared, and they were like, "Oh fuck!"
I'm
all
done.
The kids were gone, and we're like, "Oh, we were holding on for nothing."
What do you? They were holding on for you guys.
Yeah, but
whatever fucking, that means.
Yeah, like that. So I was sure what a bad relationship looked like.
But what'd your dad do?
He was a tax attorney.
Oh,
like a corporate lawyer? Tax attorney. Yeah,
and a drunk.
Not like a stumbling drunk. Just like four drinks every night when he got home and
turned into a different person.
Yeah, transform into a bully.
Yeah,
and thought he was like he said like. James Cagney was like a guy that he really admired.
Right.
James Cagney.
A character
in
he played.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
In movies, which is like, okay. Okay, man. James Cagney. Okay.
But you're like stuck at home the longest with him, like at that point. Like,
yeah, because he retired and I was just like face to face with this fucking.
So you had no buffers or fewer buffers.
Yeah.
And
fewer people around. So by like really get up close with my parents.
So, right. So, like, as the day went on.
Yes. Smaller house, more. It was just more. It was close up magic, as it were. It was. Do you know what I mean? Like, it was like
black
prostidigitation. Like, there was very.
Yeah.
It was it wasn't a table of 10. It was a table of like 4.
Yeah.
Or a table of 12. It wasn't.
And
like,
he could drink during the day at that point.
Yes. Thankfully. His schedule opened up. So, yeah, he could drink during the day. And he would like. Put, you know, vodka in 7-Up cans, that kind of thing.
Ugh.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you just never knew what was going to happen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And just like, what do you, and yeah.
Well, you're lucky that you didn't turn out a drunk.
Yeah. I have, no one in my family's really a drunk. I think we all were like, nah.
That's amazing.
I know. It really is. Because usually somebody is. We have other, we're all, well, not all, I shouldn't say all, but many of us have pretty severe anger issues.
Right.
But no drunks. No drug addicts either.
Because
it's all
wild.
That like Irish Catholic, like, you know, it wasn't, it's not, you know, we just didn't, no one really drank.
But that's crazy. That's like rare. That's like you should be a case study.
Yeah.
Usually you got 3
yeah.
out of 10.
No that, one's you know, openly gay either, or even like seemingly maybe
is
gay.
Anybody still practicing Catholic?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just maybe for their kids or
right,
something. Like
right.
sends their kids.
Do you have a relationship with some of them? The nieces
yeah.
and nephews?
Yeah. Like, oh, okay. Yeah, yeah, yeah. But they're all, some of them are like 30.
Really?
Yeah. Because they're, because
yeah.
my, you know.
But that must be nice, right?
I like, I have a better relationship with some of them than most of my
siblings,
brothers and sisters. Yeah. Because it's just easier.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's just like a very clear, and it's this thing where I'll do things for them.
Right.
That my brothers used to do for me. Do you
yeah.
know what I mean? Like,
right.
get them tickets for shit or like get, you know, send them money or
yeah.
Like it's nice to be able to just like, hey.
Yeah, yeah, here.
Uncle,
yeah.
I'm a fucking uncle.
Yeah, my uncle's, he wrote
yeah.
with the Chappelle
yeah, he's a
show
fucking
and he's
guy
a comedian.
Guy.
Yeah.
Great.
So how, like, we talked about your father. We've talked about relationships a bit. And, you know, you go to, you know, you do the recovery thing and therapy thing. I do recovery and I've been a little lax on the therapy.
Yeah, I've been lax on recovery.
Oh, really?
I mean, not. I just haven't been going to meetings, but like, it's.
Are you in a relationship?
Sure. No.
Yeah. You like you took a year off
from a relationship?
Yeah.
I haven't been in one in a year yet.
Yeah.
Almost more than a year.
Is it all right?
Yeah. It's, yeah. I don't, I'm not especially lonely.
Yeah.
You know, I feel like I'm so behind on like these fucking Hulu shows. There's so many things to read and watch and
right.
like I as a the curse of fucking being a comic, you never feel like you're writing enough jokes.
I don't know. That's,
like ever feel like, oh, I'm caught up.
Oh, really?
I never feel
I don't have
caught
that
up.
I don't have that same ethic.
Oh, like, I just feel like I'm constantly like, you don't have a you don't have a full out, you know, like,
yeah, no, I'm there.
You do have that ethic because you just
But I guess I don't think of it like I got to write jokes today. I'm sort of like, how do I stretch that out? What am I gonna?
Yeah,
you know what? I guess it's the same thing.
Yeah,
but what about like? I think the last time we talked, and you talk about it in the special about how this idea. I mean, you call it star fucking, but I think you're being a little hard on yourself. I think your nature, you know, to sort of be in the background or, you know, be part of something other person's doing, you know, not, you know, be around the more charismatic person. I used to do this thing about how, like, hey, you don't mind if I use you for my battery for a while, do you?
Yeah, warming my hands off your fire.
Right. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. I noticed that was a dynamic, that I was a draining, needy person. So it wasn't the same thing.
Yeah.
But I'd be like, you know, I would, you know, I'd talk to charismatic people. I'd, like, be around charismatic people because it would sort of, you know, give me juice.
Fucking feels good, man.
Yeah, but I mean, I don't know that many stars, and I certainly had the one.
But even the people that I was doing with, Chappelle wasn't a star for the first 10 years of our relationship. It was just like this fucking hilarious, charismatic dude.
Yeah.
That I was happy to just be like, yeah, I'll just stand near you.
Now, have you guys, like, because I know that as you evolve into your own thing and, you know, have you guys, you know, are you reconciled or are you at a
place?
Yeah, we're reconciled.
Yeah, like I just did a bunch of shows with them. I see them a lot.
Oh,
like,
yeah?
We text and
Was it ever a sit down or is just time?
We've never had a specific post-mortem.
Uh-huh.
I don't think we ever will.
Uh-huh.
Because I think there's a pretty big gap in terms of understanding or interpretation of things.
Or wanting to talk about things in that way.
Yeah. 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 He has been doing a joke about me where he's like, you know, I'm going to write a... Neil reads all these self-help books, but I'm thinking about... I'm going to write one called, Why Don't You Just Drink?
Yeah.
Like that's a just like, it's like, he says like black men don't need to be emotionally available. Like there's no, that literally does not exist in the black vocabulary of relationships of like emotionally available. Like his sister said to me 20 years ago, emotional availability went out with slavery for black men. So like the, but having said that, like we have, me and Dave have like, you know, we have a significant, maybe the deepest emotional relationship I will ever have.
Right.
Like my ex-girlfriend used to call Dave my wife.
Right.
Like this heavy divorce.
Yeah.
Unsaid, said.
Yeah.
Year, anger, love, like.
Uh-huh.
He said to me a few months ago, he goes, when you're on your deathbed, you're going to think that I was the love of your life. Oh, no, he wants that, by the way. I used to do a joke that on our deathbed, I want him to say, his last words to be, Neil was right.
It's just so funny when guys like get to a certain level of starness that, you know, their natural egos, you know, they don't know that they're getting larger. And like, you know.
Yeah, they
just
like
say
a
shit like that.
Yeah.
And they're just sort of like,
right.
You're like,
yeah, that's a normal thing to say. He actually did say, though, he's like, I told my wife that you're one of the loves of my life. So it's like, there was like an equality to it.
Yeah.
No, there is a thing. I don't think he's wrong.
Yeah.
But it's a weird, I think it's fairly unusual.
Yeah.
In terms of two adult men. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Like, well, I think that's why he doesn't, you know, I have a hard time, but like, I always assume that I have more history with people than I do and more familiarity than I do. Like, I always approach things sort of like, oh, we're just, you know, I knew you, I know you. I don't know him. I don't know.
I think people you do, though. I mean, yeah, I think
some
it's
people,
hard
yeah.
when you start, when you spend 5-10 years with somebody in a fucking dungeon.
Yeah.
In the village, I think, you know, there's certain things that like, you know, that's the great thing about seeing old people from New York in the 90s.
Sure,
you
sure.
see,
well, yeah, you
someone could be literally, it's like Kevin Hart will do an arena.
Yeah.
And if you go backstage, it's still the same guy from the Boston or the Cellar.
Like, yeah.
It's not that different. There is a thing with a little different, but not
right.
like night and day.
Yeah, yeah.
Not like a movie scene where it's like, so what have you been doing?
Yeah.
Like, you know, like this thing where there's a million, you know, he's getting makeup done or whatever, getting some IV or something. You know what I mean? There's no there is a certain element of just like, we're peers. We're still peers.
Yeah, but then there's that moment. I remember years ago before I was doing well, like I saw George Lopez at the airport, and and we're waiting on the curb, and he's like, "You want to get in my limo with me?" And I'm like, "Get you ride home?" And I'm like, "Yeah, okay." So, so I'm in the limo with Lopez, who I don't know that well, but I know him from the from campus. And he has the guy, like, they drop him off first at his mansion. Course, and then it's like, he'll take you home. And then I'm just sitting in George Lopez's limo going like, I don't know that guy.
There are certain things. Yeah, like jets.
Yeah, right.
Or
yeah.
that type thing where it is like, yeah, that's different. But all that stuff gets pretty human pretty quickly.
Right.
I find.
Yeah, I just, but so you guys are good. That's good.
Yeah.
And what now? What's the focus now, though? Outside of jokes, I mean, how do you do on the road? Good, you got.
I'm about to go out and see. I think I'll do
post
good.
This special.
Yeah,
thing. Yeah,
and hopefully I'll do well.
With a new hour.
Yeah, and so I think I'll do well. I
mean, how many cities are you doing?
Probably 20 at this
point. Wow, yeah, that's good.
That's the thing. It's like I got a pilot that I'll see if it gets picked up.
But you did some directing?
Yeah, I do. I direct commercials still.
Oh, yeah?
I like directing commercials. It's short term. Takes like a day or two. Work really good.
No movies DPs. In the pipeline? No.
Movies. I like work. Like, you do commercials. It takes good money. It's fast. It's work with, like, amazing people.
Yeah.
That, like, I wouldn't work with otherwise. And,
right.
And it's like, stay fairly sharp.
Yeah.
And, yeah. But I like, it's like, what do you want to... The good thing about being a comedian is you can
just go out and do it.
You can also just walk. Your life can be walking around and talking like Socrates.
Yeah. Yeah, it's the best.
It's fucking
with a notebook.
Pretty amazing.
Yeah.
It's pretty amazing. So like this idea of doing all this other stuff, it gets to that question of like, for what? Like, what am I trying to induce in myself? What feeling am I trying to induce? Because I find that having a series of some kind, I just did a pilot and it was like, oh, this is so stressful. Like, it just wasn't fun.
Yeah.
You know? And
yeah,
like,
but like, isn't it like, I understand what you're saying because I relate to it, but like, it seems like, okay, so like, there's this element of we as stand-ups, we do this immediate gratification thing and it's tight in the sense that, we can just go and walk around with our notebook and when we travel, we have one bag and maybe the opener's a local guy, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
You learn how to do that. But like, I keep hearing from like directors and actors and people, like there's this idea of like, don't you have the storytelling element? Don't you have a story to tell? Like, I can't separate myself from my creative output. I can't say, like, I'm going to write a story about a guy named Ralph who works at a copy shop. But I don't think that way, right? But you've had experience with sketches and directing.
Yeah, I also think that, I have those outlets. I can go to Saturday Night Live and write any week. I literally have an open door. So, like, if I have a sketch idea, I can go do it there. Go to the Daily Show. I can get Seth. I know all these people. I can go there. I don't
and just
find,
say like I got an idea. You want it?
Yeah. Right. Or I'll write it and stay there for the week and shoot it. And whatever. I did when Dave hosted. I did when Aziz hosted. And I find that I don't. I've done it and I find it fun and satisfying. Right. I just find that the gratification of stand up is way more direct. Like in terms of the things that I like to consume, I like sketches. And I like late night comedy. I like monologues. I like desk pieces.
Sure, that you can do in a week.
Yeah, I just naturally like that stuff. I don't watch any series.
Yeah,
I don't watch comedy.
But you don't got a movie in yet. You didn't find that like by exploring these other elements of yourself and managing the darkness publicly that maybe there's a narrative that has some humanity and emotional heft to it that you might want to.
I don't see. That's the thing is, I feel like I told it in the right way.
Yeah,
do you know what I mean?
Like,
I told it in the right way. Here's the other thing. Movies are, you're spending a year or a year and a half on something that may not work.
I know. I hear it all the time. I don't know how people do it.
And if you're doing it with people you don't know, you can just not like them that much. Like getting a roommate, or you're like, fuck.
Right.
And I just find it's such a crapshoot, and it's such a big, it really overtakes your life, and it can be thrown off by a star or a studio exec, it's fine, just these weird things, and it's it makes it such a big emotional risk for not much of a payoff to me.
No, I always think that when I talk to, I'm like, when people are like, I worked 6 years on this thing and I didn't get into the festival.
Like, fuck, man. I'm really sorry. I always point out, like, imagine if you made a movie with a dolphin.
Yeah.
And then it fucking bombed. You had to go to a fucking pool every day and get the dolphin to be scared. Like, just the fucking, you don't even get to.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, like, I find that the things I like doing are short-term things with people I like.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll work on, you know, Dave's Host Entire Love, I'll work on him. I help Rock with his special.
Yeah.
Like, I just like doing short, and I'll write
You help Rock on the new special?
Yeah.
What, with Punch Up?
Yeah, a little Punch Up, but mostly just more like style.
Yeah.
Like what he was sort of, what he was doing and
structure?
Structure a little bit.
Yeah.
But more performance and making the sort of divorce stuff mean something.
Uh-huh.
Because at one point he was kind of rushing through it.
Oh, yeah. Didn't want to sit in the feeling.
Yeah. And I was like, hey, man, you gotta do it.
Yeah. You gotta sit in it. Give it.
And he also has that thing of he's done 5 hours, so, or 6 hours. So it's like, I know the rhythm. I know the rhythm. I know the tricks.
Manic rhythm,
I know. Yeah.
Pacing.
I know the tricks. Like, you might want to evolve it a little bit.
Yeah.
And I think he did a little.
Oh, good.
So.
And you get paid for that.
Yeah. But like, yeah.
But it's, yeah, but it's not just sort of like it's like, that's a service.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It was born out of friendship, but it was also just like, you can give me some money. I'm a producer on the special.
Oh, good.
But yeah, like, I just like doing short. I just don't want to get super invested in a thing that is a failure because not my fault.
Yeah. No, that makes sense.
It doesn't work because of someone else, and I can't go, fuck, it was him. Like, you know.
Right.
And also, I find that the way media is now, there's so many shows that unless this thing is amazing, don't even take it out of the barn.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, because, like, how are you going to find an audience?
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I mean, there's so many out there, just out there.
There's so many people post on you go, and you want to go, I'm happy you're working.
Yeah.
I really am happy people are working.
Yeah.
And they're using all their faculties to create this thing. And I don't have the time or interest to watch it.
Yeah.
Like,
sorry.
I'm very sorry. That's just not my thing. And I find it kind of diminishing returns for a huge, you know, doing a series is a huge.
Yeah.
Physical and mental
and I did one that, you know, that wasn't watched that much, and now I'm on one that is watched, but I don't have the I'm not wearing one hat, man.
Don't think about when you leave, you just go, I hope they got it.
I hope they got it. And like, what time's my call tomorrow? I got a day off. Great.
Fantastic. and because I see you get applause from the show, and I'm like, never fucking watching that show. Never gonna watch it.
My show?
Glow, yeah. I never watched the other one. I just don't want, I like the comedy I explained, and I like documentaries. So I'd be way more likely to watch a documentary than I would somebody's series. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm surprised. I don't know what to watch always, but you know.
Yeah, so that's the thing is I'm like, what do the thing when you do something like.
You want it to be big because you still have
big,
that.
But you also want it to fucking mean something.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
I put all this meaning into it.
You put
a lot of, and the thing that you put meaning into is this. I think you put as more meaning into this than anything you do.
Well, sure.
And thankfully, you got the right cultural breaks.
Yeah.
And you got and it just landed.
Yeah.
And that's a real, and when it doesn't, you're like, fuck.
Yeah, in my comedy too. You know, I mean, those are the things. It was always the thing. And they did fortunately sort of feed each other. You know, I was able to build an audience. And like, I can, that's the other thing. Ultimately, this thing, like, I love it, and it's nourishing to me.
Yeah.
And I like talking to people, and it's a great thing. But like, I know I've gotten better at this, but I can also see, like, I know my last special was the best thing I've done. Like, mm-hmm. I know it.
Yeah.
You know, and I can see that. Like, because like it really came down to sort of taking responsibility, you know, not unlike you do, but for me to sort of like, all right, here's the set. Like, for me to crunch in on this, I had an hour and a half and I needed 70 minutes for my last special. And like two nights before, I pulled it into from an hour and a half to like 70 with callbacks, leaned it up. Like, I know how to like craft the fucking thing.
Yeah.
And I'd never really, like, I didn't, like, coming into it, I'm like, what the fuck am I? I always have this idea. It's like, I'm scrambling. But it's like, when it came down to it, I'm like, I put it together.
Yeah.
I'm
a professional. That speaks to call back this. It speaks to my love of precision.
Right. I respect that.
Something really satisfying about that hour relative to your HBO half hour where you fucking winged it.
Definitely. Yeah. Definitely.
And like, that's just, to me, that's just long term a better thing.
I definitely feel better about that. And I think that if anything, what we're both saying is that, you know, we've worked a long time at things and we're good at them now.
Yes. Yes. And isn't it, it is really freeing.
It is.
You always use the word unfortunate, but it's very freeing in that, like, the thing you think, having watched Three Mics,
yeah,
you think more of me now.
I think more of you?
Yeah. You think
I know you better.
Yeah, you know me better, and you but go, I always, oh, he's good.
I always watch you. I know you're good.
Okay.
I respect your jokes. I laugh at them. I'm jealous of them. I never had
the
any.
The full Marin spectrum.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm all in. You got all of the reactions.
Yeah, fuck it.
You got all the reactions.
Mark Maron mics. Yeah, yeah, jealousy. Yeah.
But that there was a time where, like, that, just that one porno line where I would have been like, oh, fuck him. God damn it.
Yeah.
Fuck that. That's like, I would have been like, that's kind of my joke. You know?
Yeah. He saw it.
Yeah. No, I wouldn't have blamed you.
Right.
You know, but now, having done it, it's like everyone talks about porn. You know, I talk, you know, we're all going to hit something, but it was just that was the beat. That beat was the beat. And like, you know, and I can appreciate it and tell you I appreciate it and be like, that's great, and laugh at it and tell other people that I think it's funny, as opposed to being like, yeah, fuck Neil.
Fucking, he's got this joke. I don't want to talk about it, but yeah.
Yeah, yeah, right.
Yeah. No, but that is, we are good at a thing. And it allows both of us to relax a little bit.
Yeah.
And hopefully be nicer to people.
No, I think we are.
Yeah.
And maybe, you know, the joy, let love in thing. Yeah, we'll see.
Yeah. Best of luck to both of us.
Yeah. Thanks, man.
All right, buddy.
So there you go. I think we're okay. I feel that me and Neil are okay. I do, and I was happy to talk to him. I want to remind you that podswag.com is the new home of all WTF merch. Got one more show here. I got one more show from here. Maybe two. I don't know. I'm hot, sweaty, chubby. But it's not going to stay that way. Things pass. Boomer lives! Hey folks, this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. You know all those times you've heard guests sneeze on the show? Well, actually, you don't hear any of that because we cut the sneezes out when we're editing. But take my word for it, people definitely sneeze in here, and when they do, I've got a box of Kleenex on the table right in front of them so they can use one and get right back to business. And here's what Kleenex means to me: a tissue that will hold up. We've all used those other tissues that you blow holes right through. When I see Kleenex, I know that tissue is up for the job. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.